to another edition of the Chicago Football Podcast. Kevin Fishbay here. It's a sad day in Bears world as we tape Buddy Ryan, the legendary defensive mastermind of the 46 defense and the 1985 Bears, died today at the age of 82. So we'll talk a little bit about Buddy Ryan, the legacy he left. And our interview today on this week's podcast is with somebody that talked about Buddy Ryan on the 30 for 30, and that's Paul Pabst, executive producer of the Dan Patrick Show. So he'll have some nice insight into Buddy Ryan's career and, of course, time with those great Bears defenses. Of course, on our website, profootballweekly.com/bears, you can read Hub's column on Buddy Ryan. I'm joined by my executive producer, Dan Mott, associate producer, John Solly, and the three of us are kind of in the generation that didn't know that 85 team well enough to really have revered Buddy Ryan in the way that certainly his players do still to this day and did then. If you watch that 30 for 30, you know about the letter the players wrote in 1981 to George Halas to keep Buddy with the Bears, and the letter he wrote back to them thanking them. And John, I thought Hub put it great, because you when you talk about Buddy Ryan, you start with he's a defensive mastermind. You start with the 85 Bears, the players, what he meant to them. But you can't talk about him without talking about how he was a brash guy. And you go to YouTube clips of him before you might see him getting carried off the field, which was, you know, still to this day, I believe, the only time someone other than the head coach got carried off the field at a Super Bowl. And of course, the dynamic between him and Ditka made that much more interesting. But you'll see the Kevin Gilbride punch. You'll see, I watched the one of him running up the score against the Cowboys this morning.
I had not seen that one. That might be one of my favorites.
And I don't necessarily call in these negative qualities of Buddy Ryan. I think, and Hub put it beautifully, is that that's just, he was real. And he didn't necessarily do it the right way. He did it his way. That was what Hub Arkush wrote in his column about Buddy Ryan. And as someone who, again, was, you know, didn't know him as a defense coordinator, was young when he was a head coach, you know, so the different buddies. But you have to understand that there's a lot to Buddy Ryan. He's a fascinating figure. But I think the biggest takeaway from everything you read and hear about him is how much his players absolutely adored having him as a coach.
In an era when, at least from an outside perspective, from a fan's perspective, coaches are more robotic. Coaches do not show personality whatsoever. The exception really being Buddy's son, Rex.
Right.
Buddy Ryan was authentic. He was the real McCoy. He was a guy you wanted to hear from on a weekly basis, and he was not afraid to tell you how he felt about things. And I completely agree with everything you just said. And please go read Hub's column. I think it's fantastic. And I think, you know, not only do we need to talk about Buddy Ryan's, you know, and what he's done for that Bears defense, but what he did with the Eagles defense too.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And that's a
three straight playoff teams there.
That's a really, really good defense that Absolutely. He built there too. So it wasn't just in Chicago. He went to Philadelphia and built a great defense. I know he had trouble in Houston and Arizona after that, but yeah, just an all-time defensive coordinator.
And we're going to go to our interview in just a sec with Paul Pabst to learn a little bit more about what he remembers about Buddy Ryan, and of course talk about Chicago and some of the Bears guests he's had on the Dan Patrick Show. Paulie, we know you, of course, from the Dan Patrick Show, but we're going to start with the ESPN 30 for 30 on the 85 Bears, because you were a contributor to that. You were in that. We're recording this the day that Buddy Ryan passed away at the age of 82. When you think back to Buddy, what are kind of the first memories, the first things that come to mind for you?
Well, the first thing I want to mention is that, you know, as sad as I was this morning about Buddy Ryan passing away, I was a very, very small contributor to with Jason Hayer, the great director for the Bears 30 for 30. When Jason started work on this, he didn't realize what a big figure Buddy Ryan was. He was a Boston guy, Jason Hayer, and he knew of Buddy Ryan, of course, because he'd investigated the 85 Bears before tackling this documentary. But to him, it was all Walter Payton, Ditka, and McMahon. And he didn't realize how big Buddy Ryan played into it. He didn't. It took him a while to realize that the defense back in the day when they brought in Ditka wrote the letter to George Halas and kept Buddy Ryan, or else who knows if the 85 Bears would have even happened. So one of the biggest things about in the documentary, the 30 for 30, was that he got Mike Singletary to go back to visit Buddy Ryan for what Mike Singletary knew was the last time. He knew it. And it really changed the tone of that documentary. And I think that 30 for 30 really gave Buddy Ryan his due on a national level, which, as sad as it is, they passed away. I'm glad that he lasted long enough to be part of that documentary.
Absolutely. And we were just talking before you came on, Paul, that, you know, the three of us, me and my producers here, we're a little younger. So when right. When I grew up.
Thanks for bringing that up. I appreciate that.
Just a little bit younger. So when I grew up and I heard about the 85 Bears and I heard about Ditka and I knew about Ditka's persona, I just kind of assumed without doing any research that he was the defensive guy. I mean, that's how much you talk. They talk about Ditka in Chicago, and you knew the 85 Bears defense was good. So for me watching that documentary, that just made it extra special because I didn't have that kind of prior knowledge. But, you know, for you, you don't live in Chicago anymore, but you know how important the 85 Bears are to you and to people in Chicago. I mean, how much do you still kind of think about that team, talk about the team, and does it surprise you at all that that team remains so famous in this town?
It doesn't surprise me at all. I was born on 104th Street on the south side. My dad went to high school and played high school football with Dick Butkus at Chicago Vocational High School. I've been a Bears fan since birth. I loved – my first players that I loved were like Alan Page when he joined there from the Vikings when I was really little. And then I became as big of a Walter Payton fan as you're ever going to find. You're talking to him. And the Bears stunk. It was Walter Payton and a bunch of jokers until the early 80s when Ditka got there and some good defensive players got there. And then the 83 draft when they got Jim Covert and Willie Gall and others and Richard Dent. And Buddy Ryan really set the tone. I don't think a lot of people nationally know that the 46 defense isn't a scheme. It's named after Doug Plank, the hard-hitting safety from the Bears. And Buddy Ryan was as important to Chicago history as anybody. He'll be remembered forever. And not too many people will be like that. The 85 Bears actually get bigger the farther the Bears are away from a title. It was the greatest time of my life as a sports fan. I remember that year watching the games, and it was a no-brainer. They were going to win. It was by how many points or how many quarterbacks would they knock out from the Raiders, or how many points would they wallop the Dallas Cowboys by. I can remember the specific runs that Peyton had that year and different games that they just throttled people. And the Super Bowl Sunday was almost like a not a coronation. It felt like that. It didn't feel like there's any doubt. I remember in 85 being upset that they didn't get another shot at the Miami Dolphins, who beat them in week 13 on Monday Night Football. I wanted the Dolphins. Everybody wanted the Dolphins. I bet if you ask any 85 Bears player, could they have another shot at the Dolphins in that final game instead of Tony Eason and the weak Patriots, they would take it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I've gotten a chance to get to know Dan Hampton a little bit out here and, you know, been around Mongo McMichael and Otis Wilson. And, you know, they don't stop talking about, obviously, that team and Buddy Ryan, how much he meant to them. And I think it's really resonates with me as an observer of this, how much Buddy Ryan meant to players. And obviously, the 30 for 30 really brought that out. Paul, I want to talk to you about life as a Bears fan and your role. So obviously, on Monday morning, Dan Patrick show, you know, breaking down all the games. Dan's does the Sunday night NBC halftime show and pregame show. So he's watching all the games. NFL being so popular, you are a Bears fan. The other guys on your panel, obviously Fritzy, for those that know, Dan Patrick show is a big Broncos fan. How do you kind of balance the Bears fandom, at least on your Sundays? Because you got to know about everything that's happening around the league as well.
Right. Yeah, it's a weird thing. When you go into the media, you lose a little bit of your fandom for a team, and you have to. You have to be objective as much as you can, especially while covering a sport. If the Bears aren't relevant to the national sports landscape, I don't force it down Dan's throat when we talk about the stories of the day on Monday morning or whatever day of the week it is. I still watch the Bears every week. I work for DirecTV, and one of the best things about working for DirecTV is you get Sunday ticket, so you can watch the Bears every single week. But if the Bears are up 30 points or down 30 points, I turn them off and put on a game that's more relevant because I need to watch it for the show. But it's been a weird past 10 years for the Bears fans, because I remember the day they added Cutler, it felt like a celebration. We finally got this great quarterback. And while he's had moments and seasons that are pretty good, real good, stat-wise, it's just like it hasn't gotten there. And I loved Urlacher, and I thought they had a chance. And even that season in O's, you know, when they had Rex Grossman, they somehow got to a Super Bowl, which I don't know how the hell they did it. It felt like they had a chance. And it's just, they don't feel close. They don't feel real close right now. And it's tough. But as a producer, you ignore it. You ignore the Bears a little bit until they're relevant for the national sports show. But you watch them personally.
Mm-hmm. And you guys have had some Bears on the show. Most notably to me is Matt Forte. because he's been someone that's been on your show a few times, and I think he ran you over one time on the show.
Yeah. What the thing about producing a national radio show is you look for guys who are really good interviews, maybe not necessarily the star player, but, you know, the Bears have some pretty good interviews, and Matt Forte, we probably had him on about five times over the course of his last five years with the Bears, his peak 5 years, and he was just a real thoughtful guy, insightful guy. He was honest and answered questions. So I think it was a Super Bowl in New York City. We had Forte on set. And one of the things I do on the Dan Patrick Show is I went to Marion Catholic High School, a really great high school on the south side of Chicago, south suburbs. And all my high school buddies would always say, like, oh, I could take that guy, or he's not so tough, and because they played football. But I'm like, you know what? These guys are, they're like a different species than us. And you know, Dan Hampton could kill us now. And he's like an older man. So what I try to do on the Dan Patrick Show is I'm like in my 40s. I wasn't athletic when I was young. I'm less athletic now. I try to go up against a pro athlete in a little like demo to show just how badass they are. And so I pulled Matt Forte aside before. I said, you've seen the show before. And he was like, oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes I challenge an athlete. And Super Bowl goes, yeah, I've seen that. I saw you do it with like Adrian Peterson or someone or Michael Strahan. I go, well, how about I try to tackle you and you stiff arm me? He goes, are you sure you want that? I'm like, yeah. He goes, how much should I give it? I go, give it like 90%. He goes, okay, it's not going to feel good. I'm like, I'm aware of this, Matt. And you could Google the video. I think it's Paulie tries to tackle Matt Forte. He hit me so hard in the head, I was seeing stars for about 30 minutes, literally. And I was a little dizzy. I probably had a concussion, but you know what? I asked for it. But it was some good TV, I think, from what I remember.
No, it was entertaining. And for me, I will say this. I've covered Matt Forte for 3 years. This past year, every day we talked to Matt Forte, we saw the Matt that you guys got to talk to on the show.
Nice.
But sometimes I got a little jealous in my first couple years because – and I think part of it is your show and the way Dan brings it out of people, the way he asks questions.
Right.
And obviously it's much easier when you're talking to someone like Dan Patrick versus being in a locker room and there's 15 cameras in your face and people shouting questions at you. I will say one of your guys' memorable Bears interviews for different reasons was Alshon Jeffrey a few years ago. Do you remember that one?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I remember right, Alshon was in the mood to talk that day.
Well,
does that sound right?
Yeah, and I can tell you that Alshon is generally not in the mood to talk. So it wasn't anything against your show, but I remember going to Hallis Hall the next day and one of the media representatives we kind of talked about, and he was kind of bummed because it seemed like I think Alshon had a product and whoever his PR person was did not really give him the right kind of – because if you've never done that before when you got to go on a show to talk about a product, you need a little bit of coaching. And Alshon's a very soft-spoken guy, so I know that was a little bit of a cringeworthy interview.
Yeah, it was one of those things. Alshon had a – what happens on these national radio interviews is, you know, they've got like Sprite or, you know, Coca-Cola or some product, and you get like an 8 or 9 minute interview, and at some point you have to ask them about Sprite. So what are you doing with Sprite? And they give their little pitch, and they have a piece of paper in their hand, and they mention the website or the promotion or whatever it is. And sometimes these new athletes, they don't know the drill yet, and they haven't done this. And, like, we had Matt Harvey, the pitcher, on from the Mets a couple of years ago, and he only wanted to talk about the product. He didn't want to talk baseball. And Dan's like, well, Dan, this is on air. Dan goes, Matt, this isn't really how it works. He goes, we'll talk about your product, Qualcomm or whatever it was, but we got to talk some baseball first. And Matt's like, nah, maybe another time. And we hung up on each other. Alshon wasn't quite as bad as Matt Harvey.
Right. Now, have you guys ever tried to get Jay Cutler on?
You know, we've tried to have Jay on for years. I'm trying to remember. I think we had him on maybe when he first joined the Bears or when he was on the Broncos. Todd Fritz, the booker on the Dan Patrick Show, is relentless.
Yeah.
I wish Jay would come on because I think he'd have a good time. One thing we want to do, we're not out to get you. We're not like, Jay, why did you throw 3 interceptions last week? That's not what we do. That's for the local media to do. We're more about getting a little more of the personality, hopefully. Hopefully he and Dan will have a conversation and talk about a bunch of stuff, and we'll get something that maybe the local media – he may be more defensive with the local media and more open-minded when he sits with Dan. But, yeah, I would love to have Jay Cutler. He seems like a really funny guy, but he must have his guard up big time because the media seems out to get him a lot of times.
Yeah, and, you know, now granted, Paul, you were on our list of people we really wanted to get on the Chicago Football Podcast, but I will say
Jay – low on the list. I mean, this is a midsummer booking when there's not a lot of people around and a lot of people on vacation. Hub Arkish wasn't around. Kaplan was out of town. What happened?
He's figured us out.
Yeah, he has.
I'm a producer, man. Don't try to do this to me.
I don't
this is a late June. Everyone's out of town booking. You could couldn't, what, Maury Buford, the punter from the 85 Bears, was on hiatus? What happened?
Well, we've already had former long snapper Pat Manley on once, and we couldn't get
there
him on
again. There
you go.
I'm after Manley.
Hey, I will. My producers will back me up. I sent them my wish list, and you were right there on there. So, you know, when it comes to July, we go to the list. But you
That's awesome.
You mentioned Hub Arkish, so I got to remind you, you mentioned this to me over email. Your first job out of college was for Pro Football Weekly. What do you remember from that experience?
Man, let me tell you something. Hub Arkish, I don't think he's going to miss me a lot. I went to Southern Illinois University. I went to Marian Catholic, then I went to Southern Illinois University. I studied journalism, radio, TV, mostly print writing in college. My first job out of college, I was living in Lincoln Park. I think I was on Webster and Sheffield.
It's a good
spot.
I was
a bouncer at Sedgwick's over on near Gamekeepers, a little pub down there that I think is still there.
Yep, still there.
And my first job making, if I remember, $19,100 was Pro Football Weekly, and I got hired there, and I was really excited. And, you know, it just, we didn't really click. You know, I was probably too young to have the job as far as, like, being responsible enough and, you know, disciplined enough. And I moved on, you know, in under a year I moved on. And he's a good guy. I liked him. We got along real well. And a bunch of guys who worked there, they were all real nice to me. I learned a lot about the business, but I was probably a little too young and too silly to get into a serious sports magazine like Pro Football Weekly was and is. And but it was a really cool first job. The one thing I do remember about Pro Football Weekly is, do you remember, and you guys may know, that the editors slash reporters make their picks against a spread every week, right?
Yep, still do.
And I don't know if they still do. Oh, they still do that? Okay.
Yeah.
My first week, I think I went 12-2 against the spread my first week. I had never picked against a spread. I don't gamble on sports. And all of a sudden, people start calling my apartment. I don't even know how they got the number. And it's some guy like Mel. Hey, and it's like, hey, Paul, what do you got for the game? Just give me something. I'm like, who is this? Why are you calling me? It was like gamblers. Gamblers were calling my apartment, my crappy little apartment on the north side. And then the next week, I promptly went like 4-11, and nobody called me anymore.
I remember, you know, and I'm sure it was similar when you were there. We would make those picks like at 1 or 2 in the morning on Sunday nights.
Sure.
So I've been in the office all day, and I'm just going through the picks really quickly. And similar to you, my first year there was my first year out of college, and I did pretty well. My grandparents lived in Las Vegas, and they would bring the magazine to the synagogue where they would show their friends, and I would tell them, stop doing that because I don't want them to think that I'm their insider and I know what I'm doing here. I'm making these picks
right
at 2 in the morning on Sundays. But it does remind you that people like their football. So,
no, they sure do. It was a fun place to work. I met a lot of nice people there. I think my first interview was Drew Bledsoe and Rick Meyer
right out
of college when they had the 1-2 pick of the draft, which makes me sound even older than I am.
So you mentioned Sedgwick's and Gamekeepers, which are still both there. I have frequented them a little bit. If you guys are in Chicago, the DP show comes to Chicago, which you have before, and you have a weekend, what are the places you feel like are important to bring Dan, to bring the guys?
I'm a big food fan. I think Chicago's got some great food. It's gotten better every year, but I like to go to the old school places. I'll almost always go to Lou Malnati's on State Street. Pequod's over pizza over on the north side. There's a place called Taco Burrito Palace on West Fullerton. It's kind of a dive taco joint, and I'll trek up there if I have to because I love the chorizo tacos at Taco Burrito Palace No. 2 or whatever the hell it's called. But it's a great food town. It's gotten a lot more upscale. But I'll go to hot dog places. There used to be a place called Broncos right by DePaul University under the L train tracks. And I like the old school food. I give me Chicago dogs, tacos, pizza, and I'm good to go.
Taco Burrito Palace. I would tell you about the times I've been there, but they've been very late at night.
That's the thing. My advice to people is if don't go to Taco Burrito Palace after 2 a.m. because it gets a little you know, the guys with their hats on backwards crowd get a little lippy.
Yep.
And so I would say go earlier in the evening. The food's generally the same. It doesn't taste as bad, but it's West Fullerton. I think it's Taco Burrito House. I don't know what it's called, but it's on West Fullerton and Paulina. I remember the corner, and it's been 10 years since I've been there.
It's still there, I believe. I mean, there's a few of them around the Lincoln Park area. So you got to make sure you hit the right spot. And, you know,
one thing I do remember is my first year out of college was May of 93. And so for 2 years, I was working, you know, Pro Football Weekly and other jobs in Chicago. I worked as a doorman. We didn't really bounce anybody. I was a doorman at Sedgwick's. on, I think it's maybe 1900 North Armitage, what is that, Armitage and...
Sedgwick's is right, it's right at like Armitage and kind of Lincoln area. It's right in that... Right,
yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. It was during the Bulls run, and it was so much fun. That place used to be packed when those Bulls playoff games were going on. It was just, I couldn't think of anywhere you want to be. People would just come in right after work, suits and ties, or they put casual clothes on, and then they would come for those Bulls playoff games in the early to mid-90s, and the town was just electric for those Bulls playoff games. And I was really glad that I was able to work at a pub and get to see the games and see the crowds, because I'll never forget that.
Yeah, a few more here with Paul Pabst, executive producer of Dan Patrick Show. Follow him on Twitter at Paul Pabst. Also, you mentioned the food there. I got to tell people to follow you on Instagram, because you do post some good foodstagrams on there.
I try.
Another kind of inside the Dan Patrick Show thing here. You're big on every once in a while you'll throw the Walter Payton clothes on. I kind of dig it when you're sporting Northwestern gear, because that's where I went.
Yeah.
Even DePaul, I grew up a big DePaul fan. So, you know, is there so let's say the Bears win a big game on Sunday. Do you go with the Payton? Is there a key kind of shirt that you go to when you put a little emphasis in the attire?
Yeah, if I go Chicago, I'll wear like I've got some Northwestern gear. A lot of people tell me I look like Coach Pat Fitzgerald. He's got me by about 25 pounds, but I guess I look like him a little bit. I grew up loving DePaul basketball, Mark Aguirre, Terry Cummings, and all those guys. And that was one of my first favorite sports teams. But Walter Payton is by far my favorite athlete of all time, and second place isn't close. I mean, I loved him. I loved him like, you know, as much as you could care for an athlete, and he was really important to me growing up. I loved his style, and I loved the way he played. And I got to meet his son, Jared, about 4 years ago at the Super Bowl in New Orleans. And you know, it's weird for me to think that now in my position working on the Dan Patrick Show, occasionally you get to meet people like Jared Payton, who's a really talented guy himself. And but yeah, I'll put my Walter Payton on jersey at any time. And I mean, I have it. I like hand wash it. I don't even let it go in the regular washing machine. I take it very seriously.
Jared's a friend of the program, too. So he's been a great person to have around Chicago media. And you were talking about some of the teams that you follow and how you balance that with your job. Have you let yourself think about recording a Dan Patrick Show the day after the Cubs win a World Series? Do you even let your mind go there?
I do, man. It's really weird because I grew up a Cubs fan. Even though I'm from the South Side, my grandmother liked the Cubs and my uncle liked the Cubs, and they always had WGN radio or WGN TV on in the house. And so I really leaned towards the Cubs, which is weird being a Southsider. In 2003, I'd only been with the Dan Patrick Show a year or so, but we were going to go to the World Series. No matter who was in it, we were bringing the Dan Patrick Show to the World Series. And when the Cubs lost in the 03 NLCS to the Florida Marlins, that's as painful as it has ever gotten for me. Because not only, you know, I'll be a little selfish here, I was going to get the Cubs were about to be in the World Series, and don't blame Steve Bartman, he had nothing to do with it. I had a press credential. Win or lose, I was going to get to see every game of the Cubs in a World Series. And to me, as a kid, you know, from the South Side of Chicago, you don't even think that's even possible to see the game happen, much less be there. So that was painful. My concern this year, though, is, and let me know if you think I'm right or wrong, it feels too good to be true. The team looked too good in the first half. Arrieta looked too good. Chris Bryant, everything is lining up too well for the Cubs. Once I saw the White Sox get in the mix, I'm like, oh no, the White Sox are going to make the World Series and beat the Cubs. I'm already starting to get this kind of like this light stomach ache for the next probably 4 to 5 months, just thinking about how it could go wrong for the Cubs. Is that a typical attitude?
You do sound like my grandmother a little bit.
I
get those. I will say this, a friend of the program, I know a friend of yours, Barstool Big Cat, I think I heard him put it best, essentially when you're a Cubs fan, you're just, something's going to happen. The biggest enemy is that they're the Cubs. Like that is the biggest concern. Their team is so good that the only thing you have to worry about is just the fact that they are the Cubs.
Yeah, and I like you said, I am a fan of Big Cat from Barstool Sports, and we talked just the other day, and you know, he has to move to New York, and he's not giving up his Cubs tickets, but you know, he feels like he's leaving his team behind, but it just feels like something will happen, and until that final out, I don't care if they're up 9-1 in the bottom of the ninth with two outs, there won't be a smile on my face, I won't be texting anybody, I won't be like running around my house going, we're about to do it. The minute that game is over, that's when I'll first start to think about the Cubs winning a World Series.
It would be absolutely something. Paul, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the Leisureman Show? You're now a host of your own show.
Yeah, it's a fun little show. Andrew Perloff from the Dan Patrick Show and I, we do a show on NBC Sports Radio. It's 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Chicago time on Sunday evenings. NBCSportsRadio.com or your local NBC Sports affiliate. And it's fun. It's a sports show, but it's a little different than the Dan Patrick Show because we mix in more food and drink and travel and cars and money, a little bit more lifestyle in addition to sports, of course. And like I just bought this 84 RV, like an 84 Winnebago Chieftain, and we spent about a month on the show beforehand discussing it. Not the whole show, but some of it, discussing why in the hell would anyone buy an 84 Winnebago, but stuff like that, stuff where guys talk about, because we don't just talk sports all the time.
Yeah. Well, Paul Papps, executive producer of Dan Patrick Show, go follow him on Twitter, at Paul Papps. We really appreciate you coming on the program. Maybe the Bears will be a little bit better this year, give you guys some more time to talk about them. And, Paulie, I'll make you a deal here, because as I mentioned, our goal is to get, after getting you on, of course, is to get Jay on the podcast, which he'll never agree to. If we get him on, I'll send him your way. If you guys get him on, maybe give him a little nudge our way.
Yeah, I'm sure. We're going to talk in a year from now, and we're both going to be like, hey, that bet still goes if one of us is going to get Jay to call into each other's show, because I don't think he's going to do it. But I think you have a better shot than we do.
Well, it'll be next July. You're now my July guy for guests on the podcast.
I'm your middle of the summer when you need a desperate guest. I'm ready to go at a moment's notice.
And next time, we'll bring in Hub to join the podcast, and you guys can really reminisce.
Hub has no memory of me whatsoever, I guarantee it. But hey, thanks. It was really fun. I love talking Chicago sports. I don't get to do it enough.
All right, sounds good. Take care, Paul.
Take care.
All right, that was Paul Papps. Again, go ahead and follow him on Twitter. I watch the Dan Patrick Show or listen to it every single morning, so I have a lot of respect for what they do. They have very cool jobs, you know. They work hard, though, and it's so as I mentioned, we're recording this on Tuesday, which is the day that Buddy Ryan passed away. They were in New York. They had a prearranged New York show, so they already had guests booked to be in studio. They had Patrick Peterson of the Cardinals, Danica Patrick, and Lenny Dykstra. So
on
the day that Pat Summitt also
dies
and Buddy Ryan, they already have this whole show set up. So really the way that they weave through their show and involve the listeners and the way they get their guests on. I mentioned Matt Forte. Whenever I always made sure to listen when Forte was on, because there was a chance he would say something on Dan Patrick Show that he wouldn't necessarily tell the local media. And I think that's a real testament to the way they run their show. I know Paul's a huge Chicago fan. You can hear it in his voice, the way he talks about some of the parts of Chicago. So that was a fun interview to have and to get him, let him reflect a little bit, of course, with the 85 Bears. But he's selling himself short. John, he was high up on my list.
Oh, yeah, he was not at the bottom of this list that you emailed out. He was definitely in the middle.
He's definitely right. In the middle. So that was fun to kind of talk about that and to talk some Chicago restaurants. Pequod's is a great lunch deal, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't want to say the deal if I get it wrong, but it's for very cheap. You get a personal pizza and a soft drink. It's like $5.50 or something.
I think if anyone at Pequod's is listening, this is a
sponsorship opportunity. I went there a Friday a few weeks ago for lunch, and you throw a salad on there for $2 extra, you know, to get that little healthy part in there. It's a great deal.
That'll help.
Because, you know, pizza is such a weird thing in this town, the way that we care so much about it.
We're so tribal
but
over it.
I will say, Pequod's, I don't think you can go wrong there. I really don't. If like you're not into like the really sauciness of Giordano's or Lumanani's, just go to Pequod's because you still get the basic deep dish style, but the burnt crust and everything. And we're going a little off topic here. But as I mentioned to you guys off air, I did not watch The Bachelorette this week.
We have to talk about something.
So we have to talk about pizza because I didn't have Bachelorette. But you know what? Why don't we talk about Loot Crate?
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's talk about Loot Crate, our sponsor. Go to lootcrate.com/Shaw, S-H-A-W. Use our promo code Shaw. You get $3 off your first crate for less than $20 a month. You get 6 to 8 items of licensed gear for geeks, nerds, comic book lovers, and pop culture aficionados alike. Get memorabilia in every box. You get a t-shirt every month and a pin. This month, the July crate, gentlemen, we're going futuristic.
Ooh.
Okay, so if you're a fan of Rick and Morty, the Adult Swim show, Futurama, Star Trek, Mega Man. You can get some gear from those shows, also a t-shirt and a pin in your July crate. Just use our promo code SHAW, S-H-A-W, get $3 off your first crate. I think Futurama has kind of gotten even bigger with memes now and GIFs.
Oh, God, yes.
Or GIFs. That there's so many great lines from Futurama that you can kind of bring back in today's age and throw them up on Twitter, and people kind of will gravitate to them.
Yeah, I think Futurama has gotten bigger the longer this show has gone.
I feel like when it was on, I watched it when it was first on, and I think it's one of those shows, if you're up late at night, it's on Cartoon Network, or if it's on FXX or something, you flip it on. So you'll get something from Futurama in July's crate, lootcrate.com/Shaw. Use our promo code, get $3 off your first crate.
Speaking of futuristic, I saw Independence Day, the sequel, this past weekend. Awful.
Oh, no.
Let me ask you, okay.
But is it good, bad?
No, because the first Independence Day is good, bad. It's not a great movie, but it's entertaining as heck. This might be one of the worst movies I've seen in a long time.
Wow. Man, you just ruined my day.
I think I saved you your day a little bit. It was not worth your dollar.
I don't know if I told you guys how I have 5 free movie passes. I'm just kind of been waiting to figure out movies to use them.
Don't use it on Independence Day.
When I saw Star Wars, the reel kept breaking.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and I kept walking in and out just to like get fresh air. And every time I would walk in, there would be an usher handing out new movie passes, so I would just stuff the one I had in my pocket.
Seeing movies?
I just this was downtown. This was at like the AMC on Michigan Avenue, I think. And
nicely
one of my
done.
Well, so I got 2 or 3 for myself, and then my friend who was visiting from Florida, he's like, I'm not going to use these. So
the usher just didn't notice that the same guy just giving out movie passes.
I'm trying to figure out what movies to go see with these passes. And Independence Day 2, I was like, oh, that's a summer, summer flick, but I guess I will wait till it's on HBO.
There's a moment where the president, after the aliens sort of attack, I'm not really spoiling much here, attack a certain place, she just like goes up to this alien and goes, "There will be no peace." And then they just offer. So it's such a bad movie.
All right, then. I guess I'll have to save up for Finding Dory, maybe.
My parents saw both of those movies this weekend. My dad's like, the short before Finding Dory was better than Independence Day.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, so they have that going for them.
So, yeah, if you pay attention to my father's movie reviews, which is what this podcast is all about,
podcast,
right?
New podcast coming to Shaw Media Network. John Solly's
secondhand movie reviews.
Hey, it's July. It's what we're or June, late June. It's what we're talking about here on the Chicago Football Podcast. I almost forgot what our name of the podcast was as we go off the rails there. Let's talk back. Let's get back to Bears. We have brought back our series called Bear Necessities.
I'm a big fan of this series.
Just because it makes you hum the Bear Necessities. So.
Well, that's one reason.
Bear Necessities. So we rank the top 20 most important bears.
And it's not 20 best bears.
No.
That's the key, I think.
Yes, because here's the thing when it comes to – I don't really like ranking the players at different positions. I can compare Jay Cutler to Brian Hoyer. I can't compare necessarily Jay Cutler to Kyle Long, to Alshon Jeffrey,
to
Jeremy Langford. Yeah, but you can kind of compare someone's value to the team, how replaceable, irreplaceable they are, and what they mean to the team. So it's a really tough ranking to come up with because, for example, what Charles Leno you would not say is maybe one of the best players on the team. He might not even be one of the top 15 best left tackles in the league, but – his play at his position is very important to this year's Bears team, so you're going to see him pretty high on this list. So what we're going to do each week on the podcast is recap this week's 5. So this is Tuesday. If you subscribe and you've got this downloaded, you're actually going to get a little sneak peek at this week's
– little bonus for the listener.
But that doesn't mean you're not supposed to go to the website and read the full analysis.
Well, obviously, there's analysis with this. We're going to say someone's number 18, number 17, but you got to go to the website and find out
why. Website. So we need those page views. So number 20, Robbie Gould, who I think at the first half of the season last year, you could argue he was the MVP of the team. When he was perfect for field goals, they had such close games, a kickoff coverage at the time, the kickoff gaffes were not his fault. Everybody else was inconsistent. You can count on Robbie Gould. But then you had the big misses later in the season, Washington, San Francisco. He still made career high field goals longer than 50 yards. I think with the new kickoff rules too, you know, that adds a lot to it. Number 19, Jonathan Bullard.
That one intrigues me.
This is an interesting one. And actually, I found myself, John, as I wrote it, trying to legitimize his ranking. And what I did, because I'll tell you this. Here's who just missed the list.
Okay.
Lamar Houston, Bryce Callahan, whoever is going to start at safety next to Adrian Amos, which is part of the reason we didn't.
You can't put a name there.
Right. And Cody Whitehair, Ted Larson, we don't know who's going to start yet, yeah. So they didn't make the list. Bobby Massey, right tackle, did not make the list. Jonathan Bullard, I think, will eventually play in 60 to 70% of the snaps. They need that defensive line to be so much better. Now, obviously, Akeem Hicks and Eddie Goldman are still to come on this list. But Bullard, you know, maybe the least important of the starting front seven, but still important to the overall team.
And the reason I think why he's in this top 20 list is if he goes down or if he does not progress how you would expect him to, you have to find someone to step in. So his value, I think you hit it dead on around number 19.
For this team. High ceiling here. We're kind of projecting a little bit. Yeah. You kind of know what you're going to get with Lamar Houston. I just don't know how often he's going to be on the field. Hronos Grisou, 18.
Okay.
And I think here's the thing, the way I look at it. If Hronos Grisou plays up to his draft spot and becomes that center for the future this year, that is awesome. And the Bears are going to – that's going to really help the offense. My question to you, John, if he doesn't, how badly does it really set the Bears back?
Well, okay, so let's say Grisou just really does not do well. And they decide, you know what, John Fox decides, I got to get somebody else in there. Who steps in at center?
So I would imagine at this point, if they don't bring somebody in, which I still think they could, it'd be probably they would make Cody Whitehair or Ted Larson a center. They're going to put the best five out there. And they have had Cody Whitehair not necessarily playing center in practice, but just it's something he's going to practice off to the side.
He's aware of so that he may have to take center.
If Grisou's that bad, how much does it really mess up the offensive line? That's why his ranking is a little low. Even though if he's good, it makes a big difference to that group.
So high ceiling, low floor.
Right. So that's kind of the situation, Grisou at 18. Number 17 is the only other rookie on the list. It's Leonard Floyd. Now, here's another situation where you could see Leonard Floyd really stepping up and getting 10, 11 sacks. You could also see him really taking some time to develop. Maybe Lamar Houston plays better than him, plays more than him. But right now, we're projecting that the guy they traded up for into the top 10 is going to eventually get that extra playing time off the edge, maybe more so than Lamar Houston, and is going to be important to the Bears' pass rush.
Is not only where he was selected, but because Ryan Pace traded up to get him, does that increase his value in this list to you?
Well, it increases the value on the list. Mm-hmm. I will say that's not this regime, which I kind of respect. They're not going to throw him out there because of that. You know,
yeah,
there were times that Shea McClellan or other people that Phil Emery had drafted, I think, or Mark Trestman guys were out there because of who they were.
We spent this pick on him. We have to get him out there.
And Vic Fangio and John Fox benched more players in like 4 weeks last year on defense than Trestman and Mel Tucker did in 2 years.
Yeah, if you can't play, John Fox is not going to put you out there.
So, but I think for the list, if we're going to assume the importance of the draft pick, I think it matters. And then we wrap up this week with number 16, Willie Young. Another kind of weird one because so much of Willie Young is dictated on by Leonard Floyd and what Leonard Floyd's able to do for this team. And if Leonard Floyd steps up right away, that's going to minimize Willie Young's value. But they're going to move Pernell McPhee inside, I think ideally at times, to allow them to have Young and Floyd or Houston and Floyd on the field together. They can move Houston inside too. Willie Young really stepped up late last season. He still will not call himself an outside linebacker, but I think he's bought in this defense a little more where he is going to be helpful off the edge. But not – obviously, Pernell McPhee is going to be very high on this list. But because these guys, Young, Floyd, and Houston kind of all cancel themselves out a little bit, it's hard to put them that high.
And to me, because Floyd and Willie Young are linked, their performance is linked together – that's why they're so close on this list.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, you know, we can go back and forth on this for a while. I think it's going to be a fun topic conversation on the podcast, and we hope it's a fun topic conversation for you guys. You can tweet @Bears_Insider. You can tweet John @JSolly. If you have a problem with it, don't at me. It's summertime.
Don't at me.
Summertime shy. Don't at me. But go check out the stories, profootballweekly.com/bears, to keep up with the bear necessities. All right, that'll do it for this week's edition of the Chicago Football Podcast. Huge thank you to Paul Pabst, executive producer of the Dan Patrick Show and host of The Leisureman, for joining us talking about Buddy Ryan, the Bears, the Dan Patrick Show, Chicago, all Pro Football Weekly, the Cubs. We covered it all with Paul Pabst. Thank you to my producers, executive producer Dan Mott and associate producer John Sally. Again, we have some great tribute to Buddy Ryan on the website written by Hub Arkish. Go check that out, profootballweekly.com/bears, and follow all of our bear necessities at bears_insider on Twitter. Next week, we'll see how the 4th of July holiday impacts us. But either way, we wish all of you a safe and happy Independence Day. Don't go see the movie Independence Day 2.
No.
Maybe see the old one.
Yes, it was on the next day on HBO, and we watched that.
Because this is our Independence Day. So for all of us here at Chicago Football Podcast, enjoy your weekend. More Bears talk next week.
Everyone, this is Hub Arkish, executive editor of Pro Football Weekly, and I'm here to let you know that Pro Football Weekly is back. To celebrate, we're giving away a collector's edition hoodie a day for the next 60 days. Just go to profootballweekly.com/hoodie, enter your email, and if you've won, we'll email you right back. While you're there, check out the site. You want an insider's guide to the NFL? Go to profootballweekly.com for all the news and analysis you won't find anywhere else. Pro Football Weekly, the best coverage in the NFL since 1967.
The Shaw Media Podcast Network has a lot of really great sports podcasts, but are you more than just a sports fan?
You need to be listening to The Unprintable Podcast, which is a pop culture podcast with voices from journalists like myself, Nicole Franz.
And me, Jason Frummer.
As we discuss TV, movies, and of course, Jason's favorite subject,
music.
We'll also have some arts coverage, and you can catch special guests and exclusive interviews.
It's all right here on Unprintable. You can find us in the Shaw Media Podcast Network, available on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher. Remember,
it's unprintable.